The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 9. Broken Glass. Jamie had grown remarkably inclined to enter a session in progress abruptly. At least Andy had used all his skills as a psychologist to ensure that Jamie adhered to the basic rules of politeness and knocked first. He was in a session with Rose Smitherton, one of the typical mid-50s from Easton and the surrounding area. Her husband was a bigwig in the Pentagon. The children, already fledged, had left the parental nest. Rose, meticulously organized every gala evening and charity event. She avoided discussing certain topics in the woman's club and neglected thorough coverage of any scandals. Her life was perfect, elitist, and, in her opinion, devoid of meaning. For a woman like that, Easton offered only three ways out: alcohol, a lover's embrace, or a psychiatrist's office. Rose Smitherton had just told him she was using all three options when Jamie stormed in without knocking. "Quick, Channel One," she gasped. "Where's the—" she asked, turning her head back and forth like a startled chicken. "Aha, there." She grabbed the remote control and switched on the television. "Jamie, can't you see I'm in the middle of a meeting?" Andy began, but the breaking news from the local TV station cut him off. "Catherine Williams arrested at her estate. The New York District Attorney's Office has charged her with 7 counts of murder. A cameraman accidentally injured the former top model on the head during a spectacular arrest and initially had to be treated in an ambulance in Easton. Catherine Williams made headlines for a skin transplant after a plane crash last year." The TV suddenly went silent. Andy had taken the remote control from Jamie's hand and switched the set off again. "What are you doing?" she asked incredulously. "I've turned off the TV," Andy replied calmly. "That's not what I mean. I mean, what are you doing about Catherine now? After all, she's your girlfriend." She emphasized both syllables to give them more weight. "I don't intend to do anything." "But," she stammered, "I have a meeting right now, Jamie. Mrs. Smitherton." But Rose Smitherton stood up in the meantime and patted Andy's cheek as if he were her well-behaved grandson. "I'm cured. I'm cured. I got rid of my depression. You're a genius, doctor. I don't even have the craving for a drink anymore." She pursed her lips with glee. "Catherine Williams and the doctor. I'll have to tell Angelica about that right away." Andy only heard the last words as a murmur. She had already floated out. "Well?" Jamie asked. "What now?" "Isn't there someone you should take care of, Doc?" "Catherine can take care of herself just fine, Jamie. Believe me, she always has."
"You can't do that.
The phone rang. Andy turned away theatrically. Jamie rolled her eyes and picked up the receiver. "Dr. Peterson's office. Yes, just a moment." She handed him the receiver. "It's Miss Williams. She wants to speak to you. Shall I tell her she can take care of herself?"
"Hello, Andy,"
Catherine said on the other end of the line. Her voice sounded like she'd been crying. "Hi," he replied awkwardly.
"Listen, Andy, this is the only call they'll let me make. I'd like you to call my lawyer in New York. His name is Schwartz, Harold Schwartz, S-C-H-W-A-R-T-Z.
Why don't you call him yourself? He asked more cautiously than he wanted to. His harsh response made her hesitate.
The reason is that I want to apologize to you. I wasn't fair to you. I've never really been fair to you. I realize I don't have the right to ask you for anything. Not after that party, back at my loft. But I have to do it anyway.
It's okay, he said. Catherine laughed with a touch of sadness.
I know you too well, Andy.
It sounded like she was crying again.
That actually means fuck you.
That's not true. It's really not, Kath.
Okay, then can you drive by my house and check on things? This is important. I don't want the paparazzi rummaging through my underwear cupboard and then auctioning the contents on eBay. And in case you think I'm exaggerating, that's exactly what happened to Ella in Tokyo. I'll take care of everything else with Schwartz.
Of course I'll take care of it. Do you have any drugs in the house that I'd better make disappear? He asked.
Andy, no, I'm clean. Ever since Richard...
Her voice faltered.
No, no drugs. That's really not the point.
Okay.
Thank you, Shor.
She improved just in time.
I mean, thank you, Andy.
Do you want me to let your father know?
No, he...
Someone interrupted them. Andy stood there for a moment with the phone in his hand. I don't want to do this, Fran. She'll get what she deserves in the end, won't she, darling? No, I just don't want to do this. Sure, darling, you're a real upstanding hero. So, what did she want? Asked Jamie with undisguised curiosity. She had been standing next to him the whole time. Get me the number of a lawyer in New York, please. Harold Schwartz, call me on my cell phone when you get the number. Sure, I'll do that, but what did she say? Andy ignored her question. I'm off now. Cancel all my appointments for today, he said, grabbed his jacket and left. Jamie looked after him and shrugged. Fine, I'll just have to find out from the TV. She switched the phone back on. The number, Jamie, said Andy, sticking his head in the door. Of course, Dr. Peterson, Jamie said, reaching for the phone. When she gave him the number a little later, and he could finally call Schwartz at his office, he had already reached the Rolleston estate. 6 broadcast vans from local stations parked in front of the driveway, and he identified 2 with Baltimore station logos. He honked his horn to make his way through the crowd. He honked his horn to navigate through the crowd, reminding him of his visit to Ireland and an encounter he had with a flock of sheep. Camera lights blinded him. He closed his eyes and nearly collided with a pretty reporter whose face he recognized from the evening news. Watch out, you asshole, she shouted angrily. Well, well, thought Andy. He smiled at her. She then gave him the middle finger, prompting him to wonder if she would send a greeting like that live on Fox News. Paying no further attention to her, he drove to the main house. Once there, he encountered a policeman who was trying, with little success, to set up some sort of makeshift roadblock using only his overweight physical presence. When he saw Andy's car, he raised his meaty hand in a stop gesture and, with a circular motion, motioned for him to roll down the window. Andy obeyed. There's nothing to see here. Turn around again, the deputy ordered routinely. He may have said the same thing several times that day. My name is Dr. Peterson. Miss Williams has asked me to look after things here. Are you her lawyer? No, I'm Miss Williams's psychiatrist. Andy expected a rebuff, but the deputy started laughing heartily. Well, then you've done a shitty job on that lunatic, Doc. His laughter resembled the neighing of a horse and sounded somehow unhealthy. What do you mean? Andy wanted to ask, because he didn't immediately understand what the deputy meant. Oh, yes, I see. Can I go through now? Go ahead, said the fat man. Andy nodded to him and drove off. In the rearview mirror, he saw the deputy looking after him, still whinnying. And you are? A small woman asked in a high-pitched voice. She was wearing a dark coat with a New York police badge on the lapel. Andy Peterson. Dr. Andy Peterson. Are you from the local forensics department? She inquired in a stern tone that didn't match her appearance at all. No, he replied,
thinking to himself that it was obviously not good to eat cherries with her. I'm a psychiatrist and a friend of Miss Williams. She asked me to look after things here. I see, the woman said. Andy waited for her to introduce herself, but she made no move to do so. She clearly doesn't like psychiatrists, he thought and asked, Where is Miss Williams now? In the county sheriff's jail. She's being transferred from there to us in New York tonight. Is she all right? She's had medical attention, if that's the point of your question. Yes, that's exactly what it's aimed at. He cleared his throat. Look, Miss Williams' primary concern is to prevent the press from gaining access to her home. You understand? Miss... Detective. Detective Louisiani. We're here looking for evidence to prove Miss Williams' guilt, and we certainly don't want anyone here to interfere with our investigation. Nor anyone from the press, Doctor. None of this is true, Detective. Do you really think Kathy would be capable of committing all these murders? Andy shook his head and laughed softly, unconsciously mimicking the fat deputy. You obviously think otherwise. Yes, that's right, it's impossible, completely impossible. Is that your opinion as Miss Williams's psychologist or as her friend? You are her boyfriend, aren't you? Both, Detective. I'm her psychologist and her friend. Well, Dr. Peterson, unfortunately, we have pretty strong evidence to suggest that your friend committed at least the murders of Vivian Lemoir and Lauren Gramney.
And what kind of evidence is that?
I'm not allowed to talk about that at this stage of the investigation. Whatever that evidence means, you're mistaken. That's the way Miss Williams put it.
Because it's the truth, Detective. Catherine can never do something like this.
Well, maybe she had help. As with the deputy before, it took a moment for the penny to drop.
Wow, you're really good, Andy finally said. For a moment, I thought you really meant what you were implying.
I'm not implying anything, Dr. Peterson. I'm just asking where you were on Wednesday night, around 8:30.
Detective Louisiani looked at him for a long moment. Andy returned her gaze.
In my office, he said. I was going through patient files. My secretary can confirm that for you.
All right, Dr. Peterson, we'll check it out.
Can I trust you to respect Miss Williams's wishes?
You can.
Thank you. Just one more thing. May I visit her before she's taken to New York?
Helen eyed the psychologist.
Then she sighed and shrugged her shoulders.
I don't see why not.
The Talbot County Sheriff's Station in Easton somehow reminded Andy of John Wayne's sheriff's office in Rio Bravo. But here, there was no guitar-playing Ricky Nelson, no down-and-out Dean Martin, and no toothless, eternally whining Walter Brennan, just a friendly, smiling receptionist in a deputy's uniform.
How can I help you? She asked.
I'd like to see Catherine Williams.
Her smile froze.
I don't think I'm allowed.
It's all right, Diane. Sheriff Miller said, stepping out of his office. Andy knew William Miller well. Bill had been the one to break the news of Fran's death to him. Despite, or perhaps because of this, they had become friends, and the Millers often invited him to dinner. From time to time, far too rarely, in Bill's wife's opinion, Andy had accepted the invitation. Bill fitted in well with this Rio Bravo backdrop. He resembled the Duke. Tall, dark-haired, and even had a bit of his characteristic gait, a result of a war injury from the first Gulf War. Bill had never told him how he came to be injured. The only thing Andy had learned from him was that he had encountered hostile forces. Bill had then emptied his beer can in one long gulp and crushed it noisily in his enormous fist. Andy hadn't brought up the subject since. The sound of Sheriff Miller's rattling key ring signaled the near end for Catherine.
Andy, she thought.
Andy sees me one more time.
To spit in your face.
No, he'll help me, and he'll forgive me one day. He'll be there for me. He will
take away your pain? Grab him and send him back into the dark?
Dream on, bitch. Mine, you're mine.
Maybe.
But my child, my husband, and two of my friends are dead. And soon I too. Then I won't belong to anyone. Not even you, Payne.
She hadn't had to look very hard to find something to slit her wrists with. She discovered a forgotten shard of a beer bottle under the mattress. It had glowed blue-green in the neon light tube. It was easy to press it firmly against her wrists. Then she lay down and waited to die. The pain tightened its grip on her hands. "Come," he said. "Come into the dark. It's nice here. Come into the dark. It is beautiful here. Come to me."
"Danny," she thought. "Darling, I'll be with you soon."
"You're mine," the pain replied, and she asked in a whisper, "Andy?" It emerged from her throat as if she truly was the little girl her father still believed she was.
"No, it's me," the pain answered.
She was drowning in darkness.
"Something's wrong," Andy said, pushing past the hulking Bill. At first, all that was visible was Catherine's sleeping face, pale, yet stunning. If it hadn't happened a long time ago, he would have fallen in love with her right then and there.
Oddly, he just noticed the blood. Dangling from the cot, the arm sent blood trickling towards the cell's drain.
"Good God," Bill growled, sounding even more like the Duke. He quickly unlocked the cell door. They rushed in together. Bill pulled a handkerchief out of his breast pocket. Not a bandana like the Duke's, Andy thought, while pulling another one out of his trouser pocket and improvising a pressure bandage. Andy stood helplessly by as he diligently tried to preserve what brief life was left in Catherine's body.
"Don't worry," Bill reassured him. "She won't get away that easily."
"Yes, yes, I understand. That's fine. Thank you for letting me know about it." The senator hung up the phone. He was as white as a sheet. Liz, his secretary, who had just presented him with some documents to sign, thought at first, "Great. Now the old man has had a heart attack and I can look for a new job." But the senator sighed, as if he had to tackle an unpleasant matter he had previously avoided, and said, "Please contact Leonard Johnson. I need to speak to him immediately."
"Yes, sir." Liz shuddered. Johnson scared her. She lacked knowledge of the precise nature of the tall black man's activities for the senator, but she strongly suspected their legality was questionable. When his secretary had left, the senator fetched a bottle of scotch from the bar and poured himself a large glass. As he drank, he looked down at the Potomac River and thought of his stubborn little girl.
"Oh, Kathy, why do you make it so difficult for your old man?"
When he had drunk about half the bottle, there was a knock at the door.
"Come in," he called.
The visitor entered quietly, as only Leonard did.
"Lenny, old friend."
The senator shook his hand.
"Sir?"
"Do you remember the day you brought Professor Winter here to my office?"
"Yes, sir."
"Do you also remember what I said to you after his visit?"
"Yes, sir. You mentioned two scenarios for the professor's future."
"Exactly. Unfortunately, it now looks like we'll have to turn to scenario number two, dear Leonard." The giant was silent for a moment. He sighed in his own manner.
"I understand. Anything else, sir?"
"No, Lenny, that's more than enough."
"Night, sir."
Leonard Johnson left as quietly as he had come. "So now there's no turning back," the senator thought. He drained his glass. Attack had always been the best defense, and he would defend his difficult, stubborn daughter, whatever the cost.
Can't explain why she screams in pain, running to the prison cell where the goddess fell, blood on broken glass. Time is running out. Found her on the floor. Whispers fading out. out my name through lips gone pale, while secrets keep on spinning and truths begin to fail. Blood on broken glass, time is running past, she's slipping away, but this time I will stay.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.